You're listening to a Whales or Whales production.
You're also listening to Whales.
Visit whalesorwhales.com for more projects and shows like this one.
This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music news and conversation from ocremix.org.
This week, we'll go through the recent remixes in chronological order, learn about Level 99's journey to Dinosaur Planet, and play our first listener submission for the playlist.
What? I don't understand what's going on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the Overclocked Podcast. I'm your host, Brian, and joining me today is your other host, my brother, Steven.
Oh,
hey, Steven.
Oh, man, we made it through the trial run.
Yeah, we did. No one has tried to murder us yet.
No one called the cops on us?
No, they haven't done that either.
That's good.
We had odd expectations going into this.
Yeah, we might have been a little bit paranoid. But we got a lot of feedback, actually. People seem to be enjoying the show so far, and they had suggestions for us, and I'm taking all of them.
Name one.
Well, we're getting it on iTunes, which was planned. We have better download links now for people who don't want iTunes.
Yes.
A few little tweaks about how the show's formatted, like how long the songs play during the playlist, that kind of thing.
Awesome. Those are all good ideas.
Yeah, totally. They were very good ideas. And I'm happy to get an outside perspective after planning the show for so long.
Yeah, it's really exciting to be able to move on and do more episodes. It's also going to be fun to keep recording more interviews and set those up. Those are always a lot of fun.
Yes.
Who do we have today?
Oh, we're going to talk to Steve-O. You might know him as Level 90. There's a dog sneezing in my studio. I'm sorry. You might know
that
him.
That was actually pretty audible. I could hear that.
Oh, my gosh.
Is he still sneezing?
Yes. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. He's done. He's allergic to good musicians.
Oh, bummer. I guess that explains it. So, yeah, Steve, who you might know as Level 99, we're going to have him in our pretend studios. And we talk about, well, he talks about stuff.
And we basically just try to get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, he's a very, very good storyteller.
Yeah, so. We basically just said talk about Remix and then just, you know, went and watched YouTube. And when he came back, he was done. So
it was
pretty incredible.
It was great.
All right, so you know what we should do first, though, Steven?
How's about the secret songs?
Wow, you're amazing at guessing the format of the show. It's almost like we have this written down.
It is exactly like that.
Yep, the entire show, word for word, is scripted, actually.
So this is the part of the show where Brian and I try to surprise each other with music that we potentially have not heard.
Yes.
And let's start with yours today.
We started with mine yesterday.
Did we? Oh, okay. Let's go with mine.
Yeah, I think I'm almost certain, well, not yesterday, but the other day, the other episode,
Last week.
We went with mine. Yeah, so.
All right, well, then we'll start with mine. Okay, so we will click on three.
Yep.
One, two, three, click.
Ooh, it's a remix.
Is it?
Of Green Hill.
Is it? Let's listen for a moment.
No, it's definitely a remix of Green Hill.
You're actually very wrong, Brian.
Wait. Are you saying it's not a remix? This is actually Green Hill?
I'm saying this is the original demo version of Green Hill by Masato Nakamura, which they then remixed with the Genesis.
Wait, so he wrote this on this is like what he wanted it to sound like.
At least it's what the resources that he had at Sega with his keyboard or whatnot. And apparently,
it's weird to think he had these resources.
I know. So listen to this for a second.
All right.
With that context. And, I mean, you got to take this with a grain of salt. From what I understand, this is the original, because it came with an officially licensed soundtrack of Sonic the Hedgehog 1 and 2 music.
Uh-huh.
And it also included demo tracks for all of Sonic 1 and 2.
That's really cool. So they have tracks like this for every single song?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
It really is. Some of them I like more. Most of them I like less. Maybe it's just because I'm used to the other ones, but listening to the strings going do 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 do, in the background. It does have kind of a 70s, you know.
Yeah, it really
fun,
does.
Big production style to it. But
yeah, and also something interesting is how close he got it with the actual Genesis.
Like, yeah.
He didn't have to sacrifice much going to that hardware.
I'm not even sure. It might have been Nakamura, but I'm not 100% sure if he did the implementation. He might have just written the music.
Oh, that's a good because question.
Because he was from that that
band?
Kind of pop group called Dreams Come True, so he might have not had the technical know-how for that.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I don't know. That'd be something worth looking into. Or if someone knows, write in. Who is the programmer and implementer of music in the original Sonic games?
Are you Nakamura? Are you listening to this podcast?
Yeah,
we want to
hear
from you.
Write in. All right, so now we're going to move on to my song. Unfortunately, I chose the same one. I was just feigning surprise. No, really. I think you have actually heard this song before.
Okay.
But I'm curious if you remember it. If you know what it is, and also you need to hear it again, and so does everyone else, because this is amazing, and I don't think, like, anyone knows about it.
Okay, let's spread the good word.
If any, I want someone to write in that they knew about this song. If anyone could have named this song and the game it's from by listening to it, I immediately am friends with that person.
Okay,
so write
well,
in if you can.
Let's see if you're friends with me.
All right, 1, 2, 3, click.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I love that motif that was there a moment
that
ago.
Do 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 do
yeah.
Do do. Oh, it's kind of energizing.
Yes.
Oh, it's great, but I don't even know what it is.
So this is Spiritus from Ace Combat Joint Assault for the PSP.
Oh, of course it's Ace Combat.
But. The production value on this song for a side entry in the game on the PSP.
Yeah, wow. This blows most full, you know, orchestral productions out of the water in terms of the spirit behind it.
Yeah, I mean, just the quality and the passion and the, I love how lyrical and melodic it is while also, you know, using the power of an orchestra like this. I'm curious, actually, the history of the soundtrack. Like, well, maybe this is borrowed from another Ace Combat game I'm unaware of. I'm aware of a lot of them, though.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, why would this game... I mean, I believe this is a live orchestra, unless it's, like, really good VSTs.
Oh, that would be pretty phenomenal. They were faking it.
Yeah. At the very least, it's way more impressive than almost any synthesized orchestra you hear in games. Just a random PSP game.
Yeah.
For another Ace Combat game, of which there are many. And it's actually, even as an orchestral style, very different, as I'm sure you're aware, from a lot of other Ace Combat music. This doesn't sound anything like what Ace Combat 5 or Ace Combat 6 does when they're given an orchestra.
So you chose Ace Combat music, and I chose Sonic the Hedgehog music. Welcome to us. You're going to hear a lot of this.
Yeah, pretty much. So shall we head on to our next segment, the Remix Rewind, where we recap the recent... Wow, there's a lot. Okay, I'm going to say this all. Let's roll into our next segment, the Remix Rewind, where we recap all the recent remixes from OC Remix. In the mood to rethink the foundations of reality itself to the tune of a Chrono Cross classic? Well, how uncommonly fortunate that Siblings Passing Through History exists then. described by the artist as a magical tribal remix of Yasunori Mitsuda's original song, Death Volcano. The track brings him on a languid journey, rich with a pulsating bass and varied soundscape. The unsettling paranoia is topped off by a recurring conspiratorial voiceover that basically just explains the plot of Assassin's Creed. Did I mention this was a weird track?
What the system has done is to keep from us the nature of the reality we're experiencing and the nature of who we are in life itself. And in doing so, it has kept us completely in the dark about what's actually happening around us. The knowledge that's passed across the top levels of the secret society network through these bloodline families, the most important part of that knowledge is the knowledge of reality itself.
You might be familiar with the Chrono Trigger source material for this particular remix, but that'll only serve to widen your eyes all the wider when Jeffrey Tosser decides, quote, to go with the obvious choice of completely throwing out all that happy, bouncy Irish stuff and turning it into a head-banging metal with Middle Eastern influences. FF Music DJ worked on arrangement and production, while Chris Best played the so live I think it actually might be breathing tank drum.
Mario's been no stranger to jazz over the years, and Nostalvania takes full advantage of that natural partnership in his arrangement of Super Mario Land's jaunty tunes. Seven Pipes to Heaven does a great job of presenting a focused and fluid remix, relying on the strength of some excellent part writing instead of bombastic or elaborate instrumentation. This is one of those special songs that is as welcome for easy listening as focused study. Make sure to check it and more out at ocremix.org.
And here we are back in the studio, and it's time for Ripped, Zipped, and Extracted from the Headlines, our news segment of the show.
It sounded like you said new, but you mean news, correct?
Yeah, well, it's relatively
new. Because we totally had
new.
This last week.
Yeah, we totally did. And in fact, we're talking about Austin Wintory again.
Oh my lordy.
Yeah, last time what did we talk about? We talked about Assassin's Creed Syndicate music.
Yes, we did.
Which we were just listening to in the car about 15 minutes ago.
This is also true.
So you were learning to appreciate it. And now, Brian, I know what you're thinking. I can read your mind or guess it.
Yes.
You want to meet Austin Wintory.
Well, I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to come off as, you know, creepy. But...
yeah, I know. Well, actually, I had a dream last night.
This is already sounding creepy.
I had a dream last night where I found Hideki Naganuma at a party.
Wow, and that's quite a find.
And cornered him and tried to convince him to come on our podcast, and he didn't want to.
Why not?
I don't know.
Because he can't speak English?
Probably because I was being very pushy in the dream.
Oh, yeah. That seems like a dream you'd have. I think it speaks to your insecurity.
I think so. But I do still want to meet Austin Wintory all the same, and it's good because he's going to MAGFest, and hopefully so are we. We can't confirm that or not, but he's definitely going to be there.
Awesome.
Yeah, and last year, I believe he caught a terrible illness right before MAGFest. So he wasn't able to go.
That sounds awfully convenient.
It does sound awfully convenient, but this time he's promising.
Actually, it sounds really inconvenient.
Yeah, well, it depends how conspiratorial you are.
It just kept us completely in the dark about what's actually happening around us.
But this time he's promising to be there, along with the extra credits team has also been announced to come to.
That is incredibly exciting to me.
And Austin Wintory and the extra credits team are probably some of the nicest, most talented, interesting people in the video game industry. Maybe in the world.
In the world.
Definitely in the world. Yes. This news to us comes from originalsoundversion.com. That's where I saw the article and started getting real excited.
That's really cool. You know what else is really exciting?
That Grant Kirkhope is going to be there as well.
He is?
That's what I hear.
That makes an even better segue. So you know what else Grant Kirkhope is doing?
Probably drinking eggnog on Twitter, but...
Eggnog, yeah, that actually is likely. But he's doing something else as well.
What's that?
IGN got the scoop from the ukulele team.
Whoa.
That World won the Grant Kirkhope title that they had a sneak preview of from the jungle level of ukulele, is now, the full version is now available.
Oh, that's great. I've listened to the whole thing.
So people can check this out on IGN or on their YouTube channel. Just look up ukulele.
Or it'll be in the show notes.
It'll also be in the show notes if you don't want to look it up, but it's just the World one sneak peek. And yeah, it's people who have been following ukulele probably heard a sample from this before. It is a very Kirkhopean track.
Yeah.
And now you can hear it in its full 2.5 minute glory. So, Stephen, what were your initial thoughts on it?
Well, first of all, they don't have an orchestra in place. I believe that was a stretch goal. I don't remember if they reached it or not.
I thought they did.
So either this isn't going to be an orchestral track or they just haven't recorded it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so much fuller and more interesting and varied than the sample that he put out.
That is true.
That it got me very excited.
As it came together, it reminded me a lot of the Nuts and Bolts soundtrack. In terms of the part writing, especially in kind of the B section that comes out after that original, like, that reminds you of stuff they'd play around the stadium and stuff in Nuts and Bolts. It has that very full, almost like roomy sound to it.
To me, it feels like ever since working on Viva Pinata, Grant Kirkhope has had much more of a kind of a pretty fuller symphonic sound. That said, the actual tune is so Banjo-Tooie-y that I think I can't even explain it. I don't like Banjo-Tooie's music as much as Banjo-Kazooie, so I do still sort of miss the very peppy, fast
pace. With the complexity, there is lacking something of a simplicity to the melody. It's a little bit notey for my tastes and kind of feels meandering. So it's not like it's perfect on all accounts. A jungle level like this kind of just makes me miss the wonders of Bubble Gloop Swamp. I don't think he's hitting that melodic stride, which is so important for these types of games, but it's possible he will with later tracks. Jungle levels are rarely the best in games.
I kind of agree with you, but on the other hand, that tune, that do 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 has been stuck in my head on and off for months. So
okay.
I think he's getting somewhere with it.
There you go. All right, Steve, what's our next news item?
Speaking of
jungles.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm better at it.
Rise of the Tomb Raider has been released.
Wait, is she in a jungle in that game still, or is it all snow?
I have no idea.
You have snow idea.
Snow idea whatsoever.
Yep.
However, the soundtrack has been released along with the game, and the soundtrack is free.
Wowza. Wait, what?
Yeah, they just released it on SoundCloud for free.
It's not an Xbox One exclusive?
Not as far as I know. Unless Microsoft has purchased SoundCloud in the past five minutes.
I bet an employee just accidentally uploaded it and they're like,
well, let's just go with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not worth the nightmare of having to shut it down and all that.
So
that's really cool.
It is very cool. They've been doing a lot of stuff like that. They put some free music from what's the other Tomb Raider game that came out recently? There was Go.
Tomb Raider Go.
And then Temple of Osiris or whatever.
Yes. Well done.
And so this one, the entire thing is for free on SoundCloud, and it's not Jason Graves this time, though.
Who is it?
Someone that I have not heard of before, to be perfectly honest. I think his name is
John Williams?
How many obscure John Williams jokes are we going to make throughout
Three.
The run of the show? Three? Okay, we got
Wait, one. Did we make other ones?
Yeah, last time we made a joke about John Williams being popular in the 70s, but who is this guy?
Well, apparently our humor repertoire is very small.
That's true. We're already running it. We're already repeating jokes on the second episode.
All right. So, yes.
But the composer is someone named Bobby Tahuri, I guess is how you pronounce his name.
Probably not.
Tahuri?
I don't know. I don't even see the name.
But yeah, I haven't played the game yet, but I really, really want to. I'm just waiting for the PC version.
Nice.
Yeah. Have you picked that up yet? Have you tried listening to any of it, or are you going to wait to play the actual game?
I haven't downloaded it. I've just been streaming it on SoundCloud. I'm kind of saving it for the game, but I liked what I heard.
All right. Sounds good. Shall we jump? No, I wanted your transition.
Okay,
darn it.
Do a transition.
Speaking of stuff that you like what you hear, shall
no,
we?
No! You can't stop the whole show to use that transition.
Well, I just did. What are you going to do about it?
I'm going to say we should probably move on to the Intune interview with Steve-O, otherwise known as Level 99.
That's a good idea. Someone else should probably talk for a while. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Intune interview this week. This week, we are in tune with Steve-O, a.k.a. Level 99. How you doing, Steve-O?
I'm facepalming because that's such a poor joke.
Wait, where did I, you mean our pun?
Yes.
Well, it's not a joke. It's clever wordplay.
Yes, but then again, the internet has proverbially ruined dad jokes. I'm just messing with you. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you guys for having me on. I'm Steve-O, OCR alum, OCR staff, streamer, podcast guy, and apparently you guys are having me on to talk about some of my previous musical stuff.
Yeah. That's the idea, and I will warn everyone out there, literally the only jokes we know are dad jokes
here. This is true.
On the Overclock podcast. I'm yeah. Steven, by the way, returning for this interview.
Hi, Steven, how are you doing?
I heard you say overflocked.
And so the dad jokes continue. So the song we're going to be talking about this week, Steve-O, is Fossil's Oasis, a remix you did along with a friend. Steven, who again was the collaborator on the remix?
Well, it depends how you read it. I honestly
don't do that. Because
like
no.
I was hoping you'd take the pronunciation bullet on this one.
See, it has certain words, or I should say letters capitalized, others not okay. capitalized. The correct way to pronounce it, from what I understand, is Luisa.
Yes.
It might be Luisa.
It's Luisa. Okay. It is Luisa. A Brazilian name, and you're gonna do exactly what Larry does and call her Lulza.
Oh, I was gonna call her Luisa. But no, that's just different.
No, she has a capitalized L, I, and A, so the beginning and end, sort of like those AIM screen names from the days of yore. Mm-hmm. And the capitalized I looks like an L to a lot of people, depending on
this
the font
true.
You're using.
Oh, yeah.
So she is known jokingly in some circles as Lulza. Not about her music. They never say that about her music. Her music's always fantastic.
More like Louise Amazing,
yeah.
Right?
Oh my gosh. Moving on to the song we're talking about this week, which is, like I said, Fossil's Oasis, which is a remix based on early Thorntail Hollow Day and early Thorntail Hollow Night from Star Fox Adventures, originally composed by David Wise.
So, you know, one of those really overplayed songs, like the Wily stage from Mega Man.
I know. It's just, how many times has this song been remixed? It's ridiculous. Before we play the song for everyone, Steve-O, why don't you go ahead and just introduce it and say a little bit about what this song is and how you went about making it?
Oh, that's not a small introduction. That's about a 20-minute long discussion, to be completely honest.
Oh, gosh. Okay, just quickly describe what the song is like. Or what?
The song is a love letter to the alternative rock days of the late 90s and early 2000s, replete with an acoustic guitar intro, acoustic guitar breakdown with lots of ethnic world percussion instruments. There's a lot of rock breakdowns. There's a lot of guitar playoff between Louisa and myself. There's a lot of times where I'm doing the rhythm and she's doing the lead, and there's times where she's doing the rhythm and I'm doing the lead. It goes on and on and on. It's a very progressive track. It barely ever repeats itself, and it feels like a journey. The whole thing was crafted to feel like a journey.
That was such a good description. I'm actually not going to play the song anymore. No, really. We'll go ahead and play the song now, and when we get back, we can have that 20-minute discussion about where it came from. So
all right.
Here you go, everyone. Thank you. All right, and that was Fossil's Oasis, done by Lulza and Level 99.
I hate you so much.
So, yeah, let's get into that larger discussion now. How did this remix come about for you? Like, what originally inspired you to choose this song?
This was not a song that I chose. This is a song that Louisa actually chose.
Nice.
In order to understand how this collaboration took place, we need to go all the way back to how Louisa and I first started interacting, and that was on VG Mix 2.0. I did not get my start in the video game remixing scene with OC Remix. I was aware of it at the time. I got a bunch of songs from it when I first found out that video game remixing was a thing, but I cut my teeth. I got started on VG Mix 2.0. And that system involved people submitting songs, they would get posted, and people would rate them in a sort of RPG system. They would go all the way up to the highest tier, the Stuff of Legends, as it was called, or all the way down to number 7. And I think there were only one or two songs that were that terrible. My stuff hovered mostly in the fives, between the fives and threes at the time. I did a lot of acoustic guitar stuff, oddly enough, recording in a $10 Radio Shack microphone, and people thought it sounded way better than I thought it did. I met a lot of people through that. I met Durangin through that. I met Jeffrey Tosser through that. I met Pixie Tricks through that. She's now known as Jillian Aversa. I met Deluxe through that, and I met Louisa through that. We actually met in person at MAGFest 4, and a bunch of us all jammed out together. It was Durangin, Pixie Tricks, Jeffrey Tosser, Louisa, and myself, proverbially called the Shumcats, which is a terrible in-joke that I'm not going to explain.
All right.
After doing that, she and I started, you know, sending stuff back and forth. We realized that we liked a lot of the same alternative rock and classic rock and you know, all of those very aggressive genres of music. And at one point, she was talking about doing a song that was very important to her. She played Star Fox Adventures as a child, and nobody had remixed it, and she absolutely loved the songs from Thorntail Hollow. And she, you know, she said, would you want to work on it with me since I know, you know, our styles mesh very well? And I said, sure, absolutely. This was about 4 years after, 5 years after we initially met.
Mm-hmm.
We remixed it in 2009. We did it over the course of a month, I believe, for Dwelling of Duels in order to submit it.
Okay, cool.
And I think it placed in third for that particular month. Afterwards, she's like, hey, should we submit this to OC Remix? And I said, sure. And sure enough, it ended up getting posted in early 2010. I actually think it was the second remix of mine that got posted.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like March 20th of 2010.
Yes, the first remix of mine that got posted, this is another interesting story. The MAGFest 8 in 2010 was the most important weekend of my adult life. It is the weekend where I met my future wife. It is the weekend where Andrew Lures and I, along with Moonlapse, won first place in Dwelling of Duels. And it is the weekend that I became a posted remixer for the first time.
Wow, awesome.
So the 24 hours, 48 hours, like from Thursday night at midnight, which is basically when they had the New Year's party, the spy party, that's when Val and I first hung out for the first time, all the way through to Sunday evening, where I came home and saw that The Skies Hold No Angels for Us get posted, a collaboration between myself and Audio Fidelity, Jay Yaskin.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many events that transpired that are so important to me. I'll never forget it.
Wow.
Yeah. And then a couple of months after that, they were doing a mix flood for David Wise and a bunch of other, sorry, I'm forgetting the names of the people who worked on it, but it was not Donkey Kong Country 2, the Double the Trouble, I believe. But anyway, so that was getting posted. That was Remix 2000 was DJP's entry for that remix album. And they did their flood, and then this OCR sent me a message. I knew the song was going to get posted, but they sent me a message saying, hey, we want to keep this David Wise train going and post something from his that wasn't from Donkey Kong Country 2. Are you cool with us posting it so soon? I know you had a mix post only like 2 months earlier, but this is a special occasion. Is that all right with you? And I said, sure, absolutely. And that's why there's only a 2-month gap between Skies Hold No Angels for us and Fossil's Oasis getting posted.
Gotcha.
The story of how the song actually came into being is a lot more interesting than just how it got posted. The way Louisa and I work collaboratively is we write some parts and then we send it to each other. I wrote the introductory acoustic guitars and layered them, and I sent it to her, and she told me what BPM she wanted it in. And as soon as she got that, she started making that first section for it and gave me the first 2 minutes. And she told me, she's like, here, you know, you can do the lead for here and then do the rhythm. And I was like, yeah, let's keep things going back and forth. And that all of the sections were done dynamically, either by myself or by her. And like for that second acoustic breakdown with all of the world percussion, I just sent her the acoustic guitars for that and said, here, add some stuff to it if you want. And she's like, oh, this is awesome. It's an excuse for me to get out all these cool little hand drums that I have. I'm like, that's awesome. And then they got into the solo section where I've never been a solo person. I consider myself to be more like David Gilmour in comparison to, just to allude, Pink Floyd to Overclocked University. I'm the David Gilmour to Andrew Lewis's Roger Waters, and I will never forget the first time I made that allusion because he says, I have no idea who those people are. I'm just like, oh, jeez.
And you knew you could
and
never work
when
with him again.
Your friendship went into shaky ground.
Andrew and I do not often agree musically about a lot of stuff, but the compromises we make and the stuff that we create out of those differing ideas, it's the exact same kind of fusion. The sum, it's more than just the sum of its parts. Whenever I work with Andrew. And the same thing happens with Louisa. Whatever we create, it's more than just, you know, combining our two styles. It's this completely unique third style that includes elements of both, but it's unique all its own.
So to back up a second, when you were just starting out with this remix, was it just assumed that you would do acoustic guitar because that is what you were known for, or because that's what you were comfortable with? Or is that specifically something you both wanted to nail?
The acoustic guitar is something that I suggested to her in the beginning because it...
Okay.
One of the first episodes of Beavis and Butthead I ever saw had them making fun of the video for Radiohead's Creep. And to this day, I've carried a piece of that commentary with me forever when it comes to everything I do. You need the not cool parts so that the cool parts seem more cool.
That is exceptionally good and Steve-O-esque advice.
Well, no, that's Beavis and Butthead's advice, and I took that. So acoustic guitar, it can be very awesome in its own right. However, when you pair it with something as powerful and raw and aggressive as Louisa's alternative rock tendencies, you have this false sense of what you're expecting at the beginning. Yeah. It sets the tone for, you know, that feels something mystical at the beginning. It's almost reminiscing. And then from there, it goes into something a lot more in your face, a lot more raw and a lot more visible. So the acoustic guitar was my idea. And I said, I believe that I had mentioned something about sort of knocking people off their feet by getting them calm at first.
Right.
And then the same thing about the second breakdown is that, once you have that initial rock sensation, you need to let the audience settle a little bit. You can't keep them at high octane for very long without burning them out. I'm not one of those people that can listen to 4.5 minutes of just speed metal.
Yeah.
I need to have the sine wave where things, it's smooth. It goes up, it goes down. It's this roller coaster ride. And it's filled with highs and lows. So you got the low acoustic intro. You got the high where the rock guitars come in and the Thorntail Hollow melody is introduced in a rock style. Then it drops out again into the acoustic with all those additional instruments. Then it comes right back in your face with a dueling solo. I go first and then Louisa goes. And it's just awesome. And then it never really goes back to that calmness except for the ending in order to bring things full circle.
That's something I appreciate about the song, and something you alluded to earlier, is it's very linear progression. It doesn't have like a verse-chorus-verse-chorus style of progression and also continually brings in new components. Is that something you two were like shooting for from the very beginning? Did you have that story kind of planned out in your head, or did, as you pass it back and forth, just keep adding different segments on?
I believe it was just the nature of how we did it. I mean, I'm a verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus kind of guy when it comes to a lot of songs, because I was raised on classic rock and alternative rock. And it's a lot of stuff how pop punk goes too. The things that are catchy are the things that are also predictable in a subconscious level.
So
when Louise and I were tossing stuff back and forth, it was less of a, all right, this is how the song's going to go from the get-go, but more of a, all right, what cool things can we think of to put in here? It doesn't necessarily need to be something new. It also doesn't necessarily need to be something we've done before. Let's just keep adding stuff to it until we feel like we've created something that feels whole. And, you know, as we continued to go through it and things started to wind down near the end, I just said, you know, I want to slow it down. I want to bring it full stop on easy breaks. And that's what brought that last section in. It does feel very much like a journey. And I know I've said that a few times so far. It was one of the most organic collaborative experiences I've ever done, because it was done in such a short time span. And everything we did was so right. There were not any, as far as I can remember, missteps for sections. There wasn't something we added and said, okay, we're going to get rid of this afterwards. We only kept adding things. And the things that, you know, we weren't necessarily adding, we were just replacing. Like, if I wasn't happy with my initial solo that I sent in, there were a couple of flubs, there was a note or two off time. So I went back and re-recorded that, being a perfectionist. I wasn't taking anything away. I was just adding polish to the rock that we had already put in there. And then when we were done, I listened to it over and over and over again. I do what a lot of musicians do, which is called a car check. When you are doing mixing and mastering, and you want to make sure that things sound good, not just not just on your studio headphones or your studio monitors, you basically put it on a disc and you put it in as many different machines as you can. And most of the time it's like, okay, I need to go do groceries. I got to go work out. I have to go meet a friend for a drink. I will burn this to a disc and put it in my car stereo.
That's when you discover that your song is built entirely out of bass, or the whistle overcomes everything else.
Yes, there have been many times where I've been wondering about peculiar behaviors of a compressor, and then realized, oh my goodness, I have plus 30 dB in the sub range, and I need to go back there and fix that, because I think I just shattered a window.
Yep, I've done the exact same thing, literally getting in my car and listening to something and being like, whoa, I totally didn't think it sounded that way from my nice studio monitors.
It's called listener fatigue, and you can get that when you've been mixing something for hours. I experienced this when I did the two movie soundtracks that I've worked on. Having headphones on or listening to studio monitors for longer than a couple of hours at a time, you just become so desensitized to the noise. It's just so oppressing on your eardrums that you need to take a break, because any mixing changes you make, it's not going to be accurate, because you've heard so much already. You can't make accurate judgments.
You lose comparison points and you start focusing on certain details that don't even matter. Like, your whole context becomes completely skewed.
Exactly. So car checking is a very essential thing from my perspective as an artist. And when we were finished that song, I took it to car check in my 2000, and I think it was 2004 Volvo. it had a nicer sound system than I expected, but it wasn't super, super good. And I listened to it, and I had a few crits. The bass was a little loud on Louisa's end, but after coming back to that, like, once we had our final mix in, I listened to it on loop, because it when you get to the end of it, it's so long that it feels like you've been through so many different things mentally. There's so many different images that pop into your head, but you still want to go back and get a little bit more clarity on a couple of those fine details. Mm-hmm. So it's a song that's long that you want to put on repeat, and those are very, very rare.
So here's a potentially hard question for you that I'm going to cut Steven off to ask.
Go right ahead.
which is, given how long it is, do you have a favorite part of the arrangement? Ooh.
Absolutely not. I can't. Okay. I cannot pinpoint anything. I've actually seen there's a couple of people out there who have posted videos of the Super Smash Brothers. I don't know if it's the GameCube or the Wii, but it's one of the ones where you hit the sandbag as far as you can. And yes. they use Fossil's Oasis, that acoustic breakdown, into the solo section.
Yep.
The solo starts right as the person hits the beanbag. And it just goes on. The solo goes on and on and on as the bag is just flying. So that seems to be a pretty popular section for people. I can't cherry pick out of that, because the whole package means so much to me.
I'm not sure if it was you showing me or me showing you, but I think this might have been the first OC Remix song that we excitedly ran to the other one and said, "You gotta listen to this."
It was kind of listen to this. This is the song that I listened to and I'm just like, "Okay, I'm sold on this OC Remix thing," because it was like right when I was being
downloaded a bunch of music.
Now, what you're gonna need to do is you're gonna need to get Louise on here to totally retcon every single thing I said about this and totally show me off about it, because as much as I contributed to this, I mean, I love the melody and the whole writing of Thorntail Hollow, all the different variants. This is a song that meant so much to her.
Right.
I think she got almost a little teary-eyed when we completed this, because it was a passage from her childhood. It was a game that meant an incredible amount to her. And being able to not only assist somebody with that, but to be part of something so important, and more than just, "Oh, hey, I threw a guitar solo in here" kind of way. I actually, you know, I worked with her in a creative capacity to create something that it touched her heart because of how much it's close to her as a gamer. That is something that it's an irreplaceable feeling, and it's something that I still cherish.
And that's something really special, I think, about doing remixes, is because it does play on those memories. I mean, composing original music is fantastic in its own right, but remixes have that special place to people's hearts that that's kind of unique to them.
You also have an automatic connection with other people who listen to the song.
Right.
Even if neither of you have ever heard it before, you come from a similar place. Kind of on the same note, Louisa has actually done a remix of Escape from the City from Sonic Adventure 2.
Yep.
It's like, it's awesome. Punk mix.
Oh,
and
man,
there aren't many songs that are more nostalgic or personally important to me, so it's kind of going in a big circle.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things that I mostly regret from my current semi-sabbatical from making music. It's called life, and it gets in the way.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. It stinks.
Yeah, I am still determined to get back to making music one day, hopefully remixes, hopefully a lot of things. There's a lot of things on my to-do list, which it's not even a to-do list anymore. It's an appendix for a spreadsheet. Because, I also, on the side, you know, I do my Friday Night Fan Fiction podcast, adults only. Don't go looking for it if you're under 18.
What's the name of it?
Friday Night Fan Fiction, and it's on the Nerdy Show Network. It is adults only. It gets published every Friday. It's terrible. If you have any sense of decency, don't listen to it.
All right.
But outside of the roughly two hours a week that show is being broadcast on a Shoutcast server that I have, I run a 24/7 video game chiptunes station that people can listen to. And it has everything from the original DOS games and the NES all the way up through the PC, current 2015 games and PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. There's 88 weeks worth of music on there. Wow. And it's on random. And there are so many amazing songs that I will hear out of absolutely nowhere. One of the songs from 3D Ultra Pinball Thrillville on the Game Boy Color is insanely good.
You know, that well-known hit. Yeah.
All of the music from Microsoft Puzzle Collection for the Game Boy Color is astounding. Absolutely stellar. The title theme from Jewel Master on the Genesis is insanely good. And I keep hearing all of these awesome songs, and I'm just like, "Oh, I really want to remix them, but I can't because I don't have any time."
the utter tragedy of the situation is stabbing me.
So
in
if
the
you'd
heart.
Like to support this new Kickstarter I'm starting for Steve-O, then
by all means.
You need to kickstart time.
The Steve-O return tour.
Yes.
Can you crowdsource time itself?
Outside of the two commissions that I've done for movie soundtracks, as well as a funding thing I did in order to get a 12-string acoustic guitar, I really dislike associating money with the music I make, simply because I don't create good stuff while feeling super pressured. It's very difficult for me to, if I don't identify with something, but I have to do it because I'm paid.
I'm the same way.
So, noble intentions behind that, but give me 5 or 6 years, and I can guarantee you within that time, I will at least make one more remix.
Awesome. We can at least look forward to that. And it'll be of whatever it was, Peggle Quest on the
Game Boy Advance. Too bad, because you look at Brian here, who is a musician, and instead of making music, he is making podcasts about other people who make music.
That's totally fine. That, you know what? If you can't make music and you want to associate yourself somehow, that's exactly the way to go about it. You know, it's the helicopter mom method of being a musician.
Yeah, I can't make any music at all, except when I whistle and do little snaps.
I figure if I just talk to people who are good at making music, I'll become good at making music.
Yeah, it'll just happen.
It's like something out of the X-Cup universe. So if you touch the blood of a musician, you become musician man.
Exactly. Speaking of which, as the last part of this, can I have a pint of your blood?
Well, I hope I haven't thoroughly torn all mystique away from that song that you guys told me to bring.
If anything, you added to it. It's wonderful, man.
There's a story behind almost every song I've done, so I could tell you about the time I remixed Pokemon the Trading Card Game video game for the Game Boy, which is
we should do that.
We're gonna do that at some point.
Okay, here's a new idea. We'll have an interview, but in addition to that, for every episode, we can have story time with Steve-O.
Just a second interview.
He will just talk into a microphone and tell us good stories.
Are you guys saying that I'm talking too much?
That's, Steven, that sounded like what you were saying.
I'm saying you're making our job very easy.
Yeah, okay. That's actually a really good way to put it. As an interviewer, you just want the person to talk as much as possible. So you've done a fantastic job,
Steve-O. Well, you also want them to stay on topic.
You've done a good job of that, too, though we did get you kind of distracted at points. Speaking of which...
So you were actively detracting from your own goal.
I didn't say we were good at this. I said you were good at this. Steven, before we close out here, do you have any other questions?
No.
All right. That does it. Steve-O, did you have any questions?
When do I get paid?
All right. That was a fantastic interview, partially because we barely had to say anything.
Steve-O is one of those amazing people who seem to have, like, something interesting to say about anything that you bring up.
Yeah, you could probably bring up John Williams, for example.
Oh, my gosh.
Nothing interesting to say about that guy. Who is that guy? You could bring up a nobody. No, really. Yeah, you can bring up any topic, any song. Even if he doesn't necessarily like it, he will have a strong opinion on it.
Yes.
Or he will find a way to tie it to something he has a strong opinion on or a story about. So,
yeah.
We should create a segment of that, you know, Stumping Steve-O, where we try to come up with boring topics and see if he can do anything with them.
Yeah, well, that's really helpful, because we can just store all of the boring segments and long, meandering, pointless things that we say and see if he can fix them.
Yeah. In our new segment. I like it. Write that down somewhere.
Okay. I will write it down. And if you want to write to us then write down your questions.
Our segments are on fire today.
You can find us on Twitter at OCR Podcast. And now you can email us at the proper email address of podcast@ocremix.org.
Okay.
I was saying it very carefully and specifically because I was doing it from memory. Yes. You can also find us at ocremix.org, specifically on the forums. We now have a thread there where we post recent shows and we can have fun conversations about said shows.
Sounds good to me. I like conversations.
Yeah, me too. It's a good thing too, because we're podcasters. And if you want to hear some more of our podcasts, of course, you can head over to whalesarewhales.com. Where you can find this show and other super cool shows as well with our super cool pals.
Yeah, definitely check it out if you like our podcasting chops. We spend way too much time putting this stuff out there, so you'll probably be able to find something you're interested in.
And so with that, we take you to the final segment of the week,
the playlist. The playlist is a weekly collection of recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is songs with lyrics. Sky of Twilight. From Twilight Sky Atelier, Esha and Logi, Alchemist of Dusk Sky vocal album. Submitted by Spicy Curry. Rising Up from Tales of Zestiria, submitted by Zachary. The Muse from Alan Wake, submitted by me.
There's an altar wrought with mystery of Tom the poet and his muse, and a magic lake which gave a light to the words the poet used. Now the muse she was his happiness, and he rhymed about her grace and told the stories of treasures deep beneath the blackened ways. Till in the stillness of one dawn, still in its misty crown, the muse she went down to the lake, and in the waves she drowned. And now to see your love set free, you will need the witch's cabin key. Find the lady of the light, gone mad with the night. That's how you reshape destiny.
Supersonic Racing, Cash Cash vs. Jun Senoway Remix from Sonic Generations, submitted by me.
Everybody, Supersonic Racing, gotta keep your feet right on. We'll be right back.
listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is going to be Songs of the 3DS. If it debuted on that particular Nintendo handheld, it's fair game. To submit your suggestions or just say, hey, what's up? Hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast or email us at podcast@ocremix.org. Or you can visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. Now we leave you with this week's lyrical wisdom.
Understand the concept of love.
And he said he didn't care about money.
I said I didn't care about money to make music. I didn't say I didn't care about money to talk. I'm like Neil deGrasse Tyson here.